Welcome to Star Trek Comic Book Review. Our several-year mission will be to boldly go where no podcast has gone before. We will be reviewing every Star Trek comic book ever published. These stories have been released by Gold Key, Marvel, DC, Malibu, Wildstorm, Tokyo Press, IDW, and others. Star Trek and all that the Star Trek universe contains is copyrighted by CBS Studios, Inc.
Hello and welcome to Star Trek Comic Book Review with Donovan and Ken. Episode number 430, recorded August 25th, 2024.
And since we're caught up on Star Trek comics, we're doing a little different, quite a bit different. We're doing Rick and Morty versus Dungeons and Dragons, issues 1 and 2.
Right, so definitely a comic book review presents.
Exactly, exactly. There are a few nice little Star Trek nods, so that was nice.
Mm-hmm. Right, I wasn't expecting those, but it was nice they were there.
Yep. But Ken, I think, is a bigger Rick and Morty fan than I am. I've tried watching it, and I just can't. It gets old fast. It's like, oh, they're cursing. Well, that's so funny.
But Well, definitely Rick and Morty. It at the beginning when it came out, it burned brightly, and then, quite frankly, the more recent seasons aren't that. They really kind of lost some of their pizzazz.
I think I got through the first two seasons, then I was pretty much done.
Okay, well, the first two seasons I thoroughly enjoyed.
Yeah, I'm not saying they're bad. I'm just saying I thought maybe because I marathoned through them, and you were watching them week to week or whatever when they came out, year to year. It just seemed like I was like, this is kind of same shtick every day. But there are some good ones, man. Well, I really love the memory one where he thinks
they're going through all of Morty.
Yeah, they're doing all the well, that one's good too. There are good ones. But and even the VR one where they're going through there and he lives out a whole life in VR and come to find out it was all just a game. That's one of the best episodes that I've seen. So yeah, they're good. There's definitely good ones.
Yeah, and definitely there are some of the episodes channeled other things, such as with the Inner Light. Was that the name of the TNG episode that did that with Picard?
Oh, right. When he's being tortured by the Cardassians.
No. The one where...
No. Inner Light. Yeah. That's the flute one.
Exactly.
Where he gets the flute.
The flute one. The flute one. And I'm pretty sure that that's an Irish flute. It's funny how the Irish flutes are the same as this other civilization. Anywho, Lawnmower Dog was one of my favorites. That was in the first season. And it was like, oh, that's great. That is just great. Mm. Anyway.
So anyways, that's the Rick and Morty side, obviously a sci-fi slant. And then the Dungeons and Dragons side, which is...
Yes.
I like Dungeons and Dragons. I've never really played it all that much, but I like the idea of it. And I really like all the lore and stuff. So I'm, you know, I've read quite a few of the books and I read most of the comic books and stuff. So when they did this Rick and Morty Dungeons and Dragons crossover, I was pretty curious about it. So I talked Ken into letting us do that as the presents this week. We'll see if he regrets me talking him into it or not.
I did a little bit of Dungeons and Dragons when I was college, and for a summer, a buddy of mine talked me into being a kids camp counselor at Friendly Pines Camp in Arizona. And the kids taught me the game, showed me the ropes, and I played a few games. So I am to some degree familiar with it, but
so
I just
like
played
Morty
it like maybe
here,
three
where
times.
He's learning how to play.
Yes, except that I didn't have a really big I wasn't that worried about learning it immediately to impress a girl in order to get youthful sex.
Yikes.
None of that was involved. Oh, I'm sorry. Spoiler. Spoilers.
Just a little creepy since you just prefaced it with you were a camp counselor and then you followed up with that line. I'm just like, ooh, okay.
I said not.
I know.
So, Well, if Morty has any one key motivator in most scripts of Rick and Morty. It's that he's trying to get sex. So
yeah,
that is consistent here in this story.
Another big selling point for the idea of doing this story is that the author of the story is Patrick Rothfuss, who I've read quite a few of his novels. He did the Name of the Wind books. So I was super excited about him doing a Dungeons and Dragons book, but it doesn't feel like a a Patrick Rothfuss story. So I really wonder how much he was involved, or if he was just really like, I want to channel the TV show, because it really just feels like an episode of the show.
Yeah. Definitely. It's Rick and Morty is the driving narrative, with the spice of this week's episode involving Dungeons and Dragons.
Right.
So it's this Patrick Rothfuss and Tim Zub wrote it. So between both of them, they are bringing a knowledge of Rick and Morty into it and a pretty deep knowledge of Dungeons and Dragons.
Right.
So between this, I mean, maybe they were both Dungeons and Dragons players when they were younger or something. I don't know. But they're bringing in some pretty deep cuts in the Dungeons and Dragons world.
Yeah. And I know that Dan Harmon was really into Dungeons and Dragons because, he did those Community episodes. And I've seen interviews with him where he was like really pushing that he wanted to do, what it was like to play Dungeons and Dragons, but in the confines of a sitcom type thing. So, but I don't know if he had anything to do with this book other than just being a co-creator of Rick and Morty.
Right. Yeah.
So anyways,
I know not.
So shall we talk about the first issue and then see what we think about the story?
Let's do it. Okay, so the first issue of Rick and Morty versus Dungeons and Dragons is called Part 1, Rick Rolling. And by the way, we're actually reading the graphic novel, the compendium of the four issues. So for whatever that's worth, we're not reading the individual issues. So the graphic novel, I believe the published date was March 2019, and this particular individual issue's original published date was August 2018. Creative team, writer Patrick Rothfuss and Tim Zub, as I mentioned. Artist, Troy Little. And Troy Little does do a pretty good job doing the Rick and Morty characters, drawing them. Colorist, Leonardo Ito. Letterer, Robbie Robbins. Series edits, Chase W. Marotz and David Hedgecock and Sarah Gendos and Ari Yarwood. They're all involved in the series edits. And Rick and Morty, created by Justin Roiland and Dan Harmon. Collection edits, Justin Isinger and Alonzo Simon. Collection design, Robbie Robbins and Sean Lee. Publisher, Chris Rial. And of course, this whole thing is IDW. I don't know whether we mentioned that or not, but it's an IDW publication. There's 13 covers. 13 covers. And I'm not going to go over all of them. So I'm just going to grab a few quick ones, go over them, and move on. So the box collection cover is pretty much the same as the cover A in the regular individual ones, except that it's kind of like has a metal bolted frame around it, I guess, to kind of give you the idea it's like a box or something. Anyway, that cover's by Troy Little, and it's got Rick and Morty in an underground looking room with treasure all over the floor. And they appear to be in some kind of green liquid goo suspended in the air, with no walls around the green liquid, whatever. And then Morty's actually in the green goo, holding his breath and trying to grab a double-sided axe, while Rick is above the green water, at least, from the chest up. And he's holding a sword in his right hand and a pink glowing 20-sided die in his left hand. And right behind them is a round, multi-eyed purple people eater kind of thing that's exposing jagged teeth and about to get them.
Yeah, the purple monster is a beholder.
Okay.
And the green cube is a gelatinous cube.
Oh, that's a cube. That's supposed to be a cube. Okay.
Right. Yeah. Okay. They're little jellies that go around the dungeon, and if you get caught up in it, it'll dissolve you.
Oh boy. Okay. Yeah, I don't.
Yeah.
In my brief dalliance with Dungeons and Dragons, I didn't run into either one of those things. Cool. Okay. The next one, Cover B, I'm just going to mention this one briefly because they've got a series of these. So it's a D&D character sheet, I guess. And it shows Morty's character. He's drawn as a scary looking half orc rogue character. And he's got knives in both hands and he's got wicked lower fangs and he's grinning. And then to the left of the drawing of his character is the character details filled in the document. And that art is by Troy Little. The Jetpack Comics Forbidden Planet exclusive variant cover presents in the foreground Rick and Morty discussing a map that they're looking at. And Mom and Summer are also there talking. Beth and Summer are talking. And then behind all of them is some kind of a huge eye patch ogre that Jerry and Mr. Poopy Pants are on top of and kind of cleaning. Very odd. And that art is by Juliet Colas.
I didn't realize that was Mr. Poopy Pants.
Well, I think it is. Yeah, isn't it?
No, Mr. it totally Poopy is. Pants, yeah, now that I looked at it close. Okay. Yeah, and that that statue thing is from the first edition of Dungeons and Dragons. That was the cover.
Okay. Oh, okay. Cool.
And then one of the other covers that you kind of skipped over was the DC cover. I don't know what DC stands for. Yeah.
Cover but... DC.
Yeah, so it's red and it has a red dragon in the middle, and then it has Rick and Morty in front of it, and Morty's all freaking out. That's okay. It's an homage to the second edition Dungeons and Dragons box set. So that was like when Dungeons and Dragons really hit big. You had this the red box set that had a picture of that red dragon and a warrior or something kind of facing off to it. So it's a very classic artwork for Dungeons and Dragons that they're aping a little bit.
Okay. So you've never played Dungeons and Dragons, is that right?
No, I bought that box set when I was a kid, but I never really played it.
Okay. Because for somebody that hasn't played it before, you got a lot of knowledge here.
I told you, I like it, but I just never really played it much.
Okay, cool. And then there's just a lot of other ones. And the last one I'm going to mention is going to be the one that is by Sarah Richard. And it's retailer incentive cover A, and it presents Rick locked in a life and death struggle with the tentacled monster Cthulhu. It's not the best drawing in the world, but it's got Cthulhu, so I have to mention it. At least it looks like Cthulhu to me, but I'm sure maybe it's actually some specific named Dungeons and Dragons thing. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's a mind flayer.
A mind flayer. Okay, there you go. There you go. A mind flayer. Who looks tentacled and kind of Cthulhu-y.
Yeah, it totally is.
Okay. And that's going to be it as far as the covers. They got a lot. Go on, look at them yourself if you want. Morty's on the school bus and at school hearing obnoxious schoolmates talking to each other excitedly in almost another language. He finally realizes they are talking about their make-believe adventures playing Dungeons & Dragons, which he has never done before. So, of course, being an insecure teenager, he feels like an outsider who wants to get into it. The icing on the cake is when he overhears in a conversation that D&D players get laid. After school, Morty goes to the Hobby Hall, where all kinds of geek gear can be found, including a bunch of D&D stuff. He talks to a cute girl that works there, and of course, he starts lying that he's a player. She directs him to where D&D how-to books are, saying that, oh, it's for a friend. After he buys the books, the girl invites him back to the store to play on Friday with she and her friends. They have an opening. Thinking he's going to get some with this girl, he accepts, but later in his bedroom at home, he realizes D&D has a learning curve that he will not be able to overcome by Friday. He goes with Plan B and asks Uncle Rick to use technology to inject the needed game-playing knowledge into his head or something. On hearing Morty has a strong interest in D&D, Rick is thrilled, since he is a D&D master from way back. Rick goes over the basics with Morty and helps Morty fill out a character sheet, which of course they cheat at. Rick takes the next step by inviting some of his old, and I mean really old, D&D playing buddies over for an all-night game. Morty constantly dies during the game, which frustrates him greatly. In the morning, Morty is angry and almost ready to give up when Rick chastises him and says that he needs to pay his dues in this journey to becoming a master player. Rick takes his Padawan grandson to the next level of training by stepping them through a portal into what looks like an intergalactic arcade. Rick proceeds to heavily modify a VR game to make it the most awesome VR D&D game in the universe. They put on headsets and are whisked away to a medieval land where locals immediately ask them to save their village by smiting a nearby evil that has been preying on them. The Paladin Knight Morty and the Wizard Rick take up the quest, but on their way to the evil are attacked by evil zombies that come up from the ground. Morty freaks out, of course, until Rick coaches him to take his sword out of his sheath and use it to hack the zombies. Morty's initial success with the weapon gets him excited, and the hack fest clicks up a notch until he overly excitedly ends up accidentally running Rick through Rick's heart with the sword. As Rick lies there bleeding in Morty's arms, in the real world, two employees of the Blip and Chits arcade come upon Rick and Morty hooked up to the arcade's hardware that Rick heavily modified without permission. One of the employees is a game repairman who callously unplugs the game despite the other employee's observation that would probably fry their brains. The callous repairman really does not care and unplugs the modified game. Despite the game not being hooked up to power anymore, a huge jolt of electricity surges out of the game hardware and into Rick and Morty's skulls, instantly electrocuting them to death. The end.
Now that's a cliffhanger.
I was not expecting that to be the way the issue ended, since there are four parts. So.
Right. That's just volume one. There's also a volume two with four more issues.
There you go.
They really milk this crossover.
Mm-hmm.
In addition to the comic books, there's also a game companion box set that had like special rule books and stuff so that you could somehow play Rick and Morty in Dungeons and Dragons. I've never read any of those, so I don't know how it would work.
Right.
But anyways, what'd you think?
I thought the beginning of the book was a little obnoxious with all the cool kids using terminology and just thinking they were just so awesomely cool. So that was kind of obnoxious at the beginning, but I kind of liked them dying at the end.
Right.
Which is not an unusual thing in the TV series.
Right. So being a person of my age, I was reading this thinking, oh, they're kind of making fun of this would never happen. You know, none of the cool kids really like Dungeons and Dragons and stuff because that was for the nerds.
Okay.
But I don't know. Maybe nowadays it's kind of turned and it's more it's definitely more mainstream now than it was back when we were kids.
Yeah.
So maybe this is how it is. Maybe the cool kids are playing Dungeons and Dragons now.
Well, when I was a camp counselor, when I was in college, a long time ago, a lot of the kids were into D&D. And they weren't all just the geek kids.
That's
so,
cool.
But that was a long time ago. So I think even more now, geek stuff in general is a little bit more mainstream than it used to be. So,
I think
maybe more a broad base of youngins play D&D these days. Who knows?
Yeah. So I thought that part was funny, you know, in just that, you know, it was kind of a, maybe us nerds thought that that would, maybe someday we would be the cool kids, you know, that kind of thing on the bus. But then when he went into the store to buy Dungeons and Dragons, I love that part because he's like, oh, maybe I should start at volume one. You know, that's a good place to start. And, you know, because I know how the game works, it's just like, oh, my goodness, that's so funny because, you know, we're on volume, we're on fifth edition now. So it's just like, oh, man, everything you learn there is useless. And I love how she's even like, oh, you're going old school. That's great. You know, that kind of thing. I thought, you know, some of those jokes I thought were pretty good.
Right. Working a little better if you were more familiar with all the many years of material that's out there.
Right, right.
Which I am not. So none of that really made any difference to me at all from a joke. Oh, I get that.
Yeah. And then when he's walking through the store, you also see Starhammer. So instead of Warhammer, it's Starhammer. I love the idea of Warhammer, but oh my goodness, it's just, that just looks too hard. Just like so many models and so many rules.
All
just
characters
like,
and
yeah. But anyways, no, I love
video games.
Going through the, oh yeah, I love the video games. Like
I mean, it's progressed from the board games to video games, and now what Henry Cavill is going to do a movie.
Maybe.
So, maybe? I thought that was a done deal.
I heard that it's kind of, now it's a maybe again.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, poor Henry Cavill can't catch a break. First Superman, then The Witcher, and now his beloved Warhammer may not even happen, so.
Well, but it was his choice to leave Witcher, right?
Yeah. Because he wanted to do the Warhammer thing, because that was his dream job.
Right.
And then if it doesn't actually happen, then it's kind of stinks.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
Anyways, no, I liked all the little nods to that kind of stuff. I really loved the hobby mall thing, or hobby hall, whatever it was called.
Exactly, yeah.
And she had Hork hands instead of Hulk.
Exactly, right. Completely looked like Hulk hands, but they were Hork hands, yes.
So when Rick...
Great way to repurpose the game, or the toy.
Exactly, right. You wouldn't even have to change it, just the packaging. And now they're orc hands.
Yeah.
The friends that come over to play Dungeons & Dragons, the one that's the DM. Yeah. The one that's the DM. Is he supposed to be George R.R. Martin?
I think so. I think that's definitely a nod to George R.R. Martin.
Yeah. At first I thought maybe it was Patrick Rufus, but I was like, oh man, that looks too much like George R.R. Martin to not be an homage to him.
Exactly. The beard, the hat, the whole thing.
Yeah. Patrick Rufus has the big beard, but not the hat. So, and I have never seen him with glasses either. And those are definitely George R.R. Martin glasses.
Yeah.
The square ones.
Exactly. Right. So,
anyways, I thought that was kind of a cool nod.
Mm-hmm.
So, in all their little banter back and forth, you didn't care less about all the actual Dungeons and Dragons playing? Were you like,
well, no,
you
bored? I mean, to some degree for the things that I understood, but there was a lot of chit chat where the kids are talking about.
I'm talking about the old men talking.
Couple
pages of that too.
Oh. I mean, to some degree, I was able to follow it, and some things they were saying, I could like conceptually understand what they were saying, but I had no firsthand experience. So I knew there were nuances I was missing in what the dialogue was going on, but I just went with it.
Yeah. Same.
But I'm sure I would have if I understood more about the game, I would have gotten a greater level of understanding and enjoyment.
Right. Yeah. Maybe there was some jokes built in there that we didn't catch.
Yeah.
And then I love it when they went to the Dave and Buster's type thing, because that's my favorite episode.
Yeah.
And he basically makes a Dungeons and Dragons world. I thought that was great.
Yeah, that was good. And I kind of liked it because of the fact that they're kind of like building up. So Rick's first thing is, let's go to an intergalactic Dave and Buster's or arcade, whatever, and we'll modify some existing hardware to get this going faster.
Right.
So that was kind of cool. And it was kind of cool seeing the different aliens and stuff. and especially the people that were working at the place. Crocodile kind of sort of looking guy who's the hardware repair guy, and then the other guy,
the manager,
the wimpy. Well,
I don't know. Is he the manager? I don't know.
I thought he was the manager in this issue too, but when we get to the second issue, I think he is more like one of the other workers. Because we see a third guy in the next issue that is the manager.
Okay.
But it was like, oh, that kind of makes sense. Because, of course, we'll see in the next issue how Rick's going to take it even further.
Right.
So I kind of like that. And because back in the day, I used to go to arcades all the time.
Yeah.
Before the thing Dave and Buster's was created.
And I love me some Dave and Buster's, even today.
Yeah. Well, it's great that a place like David Buster's is out there, because most of the arcades I ever went to when I was younger in Phoenix, they don't exist anymore.
They do not.
So thumbs up to Dave and Buster's to keep that little drive alive.
Yeah, but the bad thing about arcades now is that they're either gotcha games where they're just like get tickets or whatever, so like skee ball and that kind of games, or shooting games, light gun games. There's very little actual arcade type games still there.
Old-fashioned.
I mean, not even like old-fashioned, just like not even like newer versions of the old games.
Well, yeah, like you're not going to see anything that, you know, is a successor to Asteroids or Dig Dug.
Ironically enough, those are the ones that you will see. So they do like these like updated versions of Asteroids and Pac-Man and Space Invaders, where they put it on big screen, and it's just basically the same game, but you're paying three times more than you used to pay.
Yeah, and what I'm saying is a non-shooter that is like a successor, not a cleaned up, higher resolution version of the old 8-bit games or whatever.
Yeah.
I'm saying a non-shooter game.
Right.
But that too.
Yeah, aside from the light gun games, the gacha games, the other ones they do have a little bit of is the VR game. So the idea that
and those are the expensive ones.
Yeah. But they are there, so you can You can play those.
Yeah. I've seen some where they have like four different things you like walk up and like step into, kind of, sort of.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
And they put the VR headsets on you.
Right. And then Dave & Buster's has a really cool one where it's actually kind of a ride where you're shooting while you're on this little like gimbal thing. Mm-hmm. And they have a cool Star Trek one, which I highly recommend you go and try it out before it goes away. It's set in the Kelvin universe. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, you basically walk on, and then, you know, then you're when you're plugged in, your character gets on a shuttlecraft, and then you're like using this gun to shoot asteroids and stuff before it hits the Kelvin Enterprise. And oh man, it's so beautiful.
Cool.
You should really go. Go to the mall and go to the Dave and Buster's. Just do that out. They have a Terminator one too. It's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. Anyways, enough about Dave and Buster's. So you mentioned the aliens. What's the name of the alien there? Is that a Meep or a Meeple or the guy that shows up and grants your wish or whatever? When they're plugged in and the crocodile guy is talking to the bug guy, you see the little blue guy in the background. I know he's from the show.
Rick and Morty.
Yeah.
He's from Rick and Morty?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what you're talking about. Let me look.
Yeah, if you look at the panel, you'll know who he's talking about. They're the guys that like would do anything you ask them to do. Is it a Meeple?
They're in the background. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, the blue. Okay, the blue guys. Yeah. With almost no facial features.
Right, and just little
eyes and
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. I thought you knew who it was from Rick and Morty.
No. I kind of recognize him from Rick and Morty, but I don't remember what they were.
Okay. All right.
So they grant you wishes, huh?
Didn't they? I don't remember.
I don't remember. I don't remember. Sorry. Yeah. Yes, I have seen pretty much every episode, but I don't necessarily watch them over and over again.
Sure. I mean, they're
so
not
some characters so I don't remember. What exactly? There you go.
All right. Anything else on this issue before we go to issue two?
I just want to say that it figures so much that Morty, a.k.a. Gilligan, would be the one that puts his sword through Rick's chest. That is funny. That's good. Very expected.
Yeah, it's pretty funny.
Yeah, that's it for me. That's all I got to say.
That's it? All right.
Yep.
That's it. So our heroes are dead. Let's find out what happens. All right, so issue two came out September of 2018. There's only four covers this time. The first cover is by Troy Little, and it's the main cover. It shows Summer doing a selfie with her mom, Beth, holding a glowing sword. And there's some, I don't know, trolls or goblins or something around them. And then cover B is that character sheet, but this time it is Summer as a ranger. So she kind of looks like Robin Hood a little bit with a bow and arrow. And then the other two covers, there's one that's just them all in like on a pile of gold being attacked by various monsters. And then another one is kind of the same thing, just different artists, different monsters. One was by Julia Scott and the other one is by Tess Fowler. All right, so here we go. Story. This one's entitled A Harsh Mistress. We cut back to Beth and Summer at the Sanchez household, and they're looking for Rick and Morty, and they're noticing the trashed-out garage. This is where Rick's old pals were playing Dungeons & Dragons the previous day. They're berating the family members for making the big mess, but then they also cleaning it up for some reason. I personally would have left it. So meanwhile, Rick and Morty are indeed dead at the alien Dave & Buster's. The manager calls over the janitor, who looks like a giant Cthulhu-looking dude, but he's carrying around a mop. The manager orders him to take the bodies back. So the janitor, who is named Gary, by the way, scoops them up, opens up a dimensional portal, drops them into their house at home, back on Earth, and then he resurrects them for good measure. And then after he does that, he pops back out with the portal and probably going to clean up some spilled soda on the Space Pac-Man machine or something. So with the family reunited, there's lots of banter between the four of them about how great D&D is as a game. Even Summer admits that she plays it. So this leaves Morty feeling even more left out. They all agree to play, and Rick disappears to get things ready. So later he arrives back, and he takes them to a hard light simulation complex that he's created. And it riles him a little bit when Morty keeps calling it a holodeck, but that's basically what it is. So Rick has created the greatest D&D campaign, and he lets his family choose their classes. So Beth is a hard-drinking barbarian, Summer is a rogue, and Morty takes a half-orc cleric role. And then Rick becomes a wizard for himself. They then embark on an adventure, and they encounter kobolds, werewolves, ogliths, mimics, dragons, and even displacer beasts. Before too long, the family is getting tired since they're doing all the work, and carrying around that much gold and loot is getting a little heavy. They just want to go back to a nearby tavern, and they also kind of suspect that Rick's cheating since he seems to be winning every fight without much effort. They agree to separate, and Rick goes on solo for the rest of his adventure, while everybody else goes back to town. So Rick ends up winning the rest of the campaign with ease, you know, because he's cheating, but he's not having any fun without an audience. So he decides to return to the tavern. And when he gets there, he finds out that the family is having the time of their lives. And all the townies are now praising them as heroes since they took care of a couple of bugbears who were getting a little too rough. Suddenly, the holodeck glitches out and all the townsfolk start to melt in a very horrific way. Rick is able to get the four of them back home just in the nick of time. And then they find that Jerry has decided to plug in his George Foreman grill, and that's what caused the surge and the holodeck failure. Summer and Morty are completely mortified about what they just saw, and Beth and Rick look annoyed, and they know exactly who to blame. To be continued.
Well, it's good to get all the characters into it.
What, Jerry? You had to bring Jerry back?
Had to bring Jerry. And plus, you know, Beth and summer.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that's right.
So they weren't getting them all involved.
Issue. Yeah, yeah.
Right. And the idea that Jerry would screw up the holodeck is so Jerry.
Yeah, by trying to plug in a George Foreman. I mean, I didn't mention it, but yeah, he's going around the house trying to find a three-prong plug. A two-prong plug. No, wait. Yeah, he's looking for three-prong plug because all the ones in the house are two-pronged. And that's what causes the garage to surge and malfunction. I thought it was hilarious.
Yeah, and the idea that at this point they're divorced, so he's coming back to the house and stuffing his pockets with canned goods is funny also.
Yeah, I always feel
and
bad
grabbing
for Jerry.
George Foreman. You feel bad for what?
I feel bad for Jerry.
He's such a tool.
His family hates him so much.
And the actor that plays him, does the voice, is so perfect.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I love watching shows, and he shows up, and then the kids are like, is that Jerry? And I'm like, yep, that's him.
It's Jerry. Yeah, so the father has to be the tool. That's a lot of comedies are like that. Being a father, we both are like, wait a minute.
The fathers are supposed to be the cool guys.
Exactly.
So,
like Simpsons. And...
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Simpsons. All of them. Flintstones. Yeah. Honeymooners. It goes way back.
Oh, well, yeah. But Honeymooners were not as bad as the way some of the comic or the cartoons. I mean, Family Guy. It's like, oh my God. Peter.
Yeah. Yeah. At some point, they just made the father the dumb one.
Exactly. Thanks. Anyway, so great. They got a holodeck. I love the reference.
Yeah, me too. And I love that it kind of ticked Rick off every time Morty would call it a holodeck.
No. It's a blah, 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 blah. It's a holodeck.
Yeah, I like that.
I love Gary the Cthulhu. That's great. And every time, so the guy that, the janitor.
The janitor.
So the manager tells the janitor to bring them back and then resurrect them. That's so funny. And then every time Gary the janitor, who is a Cthulhu kind of mind flayer, whatever, I don't know what the fuck.
Yeah, I don't know what he is.
Every time he talks, it's great because he keeps on talking about fulfilling his blood debt. It's great.
Right.
So, I mean, his name's Gary, but he talks like one of these alternate dimension creatures or something.
Yeah, and his little word boxes are always black with white letters.
Exactly.
So it stands out. Yeah, I loved it.
And the last thing you see him say as he departs is, "Thus, my blood debt is fulfilled." There you go. That's great.
Yeah, so did the manager know that he was going to revive him or just drop him
off?
Well,
I think so. I think so because he discovers by going through Rick's pockets that he's a platinum medallion member.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
of Dave and Buster's.
Space Dave and Buster's.
Exactly. And the great thing is the coin that shows that he's a medallion platinum member has a little hologram of Rick. And it says, "Up yours, I do what I want." Because that is so a platinum member of any kind of program like that. It's like, I can get away with anything I want, and you know it. So, anyway.
But I don't think they were quite dead, because when the manager's looking at Morty, they say, oh, he might not be dead, because he's still twitching and peeing everywhere. So, I don't think he would be peeing this much if he was dead.
Exactly. Well, you do know what happens when you die, right?
Yeah, I used to be a mortician.
Exactly. Well, you know that then.
I mean, know that.
Muscles that hold back things don't work anymore.
They relax.
Exactly.
Yeah. So
pee and poo is not all that unusual after you die. Unfortunately. So,
all right,
some
let's
people
change
may not know
subject.
That, but let's move on. Exactly. Let's move on. So it was great seeing Summer and Beth come into it. So that's good. Yeah. Let's have the ladies get involved. I like the default Summer outfit when she goes a rogue.
The bathing suit one?
Yeah, exactly. So she's in a skimpy thing, which is funny.
Yeah, what did she say? This is supposed to be armor. It's more like paint. which is so true when in fantasy stuff when they armor clad the women and they're wearing nothing.
Exactly, right. Because they know.
Yeah, then Rick's like, it's manticore whatever. Leather. You know, it's like, okay, so it has magical properties, but it's still pretty skimpy.
Yeah, exactly. Funny. But then she does her, ranger? Is that what she is? A ranger? Because she looks more like Morty's.
No, I think she's a rogue. She's a rogue.
Okay.
On the character sheet, she's a ranger.
A ranger.
But in this, she's a rogue, and she goes by the name Winterblade.
And I love the logo.
Yeah, I do too.
So the first time when Rick says, "Whoa, nice one, Summer." And then Summer responds, "Summer doesn't live here anymore. Call me." And then they have the logo for Winterblade. And it's got like blades making the T and then going across it horizontally. It's great.
Yeah, it looks a lot like the Witchblade logo from the comic book Witchblade.
Okay, cool. And then three more places in the book when she does her thing. She says, Winterblade, and they got the logo. It's great.
Right. Yeah, so Morty's not a half-orc yet. He's still just a bald human or something.
Well, exactly. So the cover gamer sheets are totally different than what's in the book.
Yeah, must be something that happens later in the series or something.
Yeah, maybe. Or the cover person didn't care. He just did what he wanted. Yeah. So Morty, if you don't have the book, he's a cleric, healer, whatever, and he looks like Danny DeVito.
He does look like Danny DeVito. He's got the little donut hair, and he's tiny, and he's a little grumpy.
He's grumpy because he's not looking cool at all. All the battles that happen, he seems to be getting the most amount of damage.
He's the one they send out first.
Exactly. So they got these little alligator kobolds, I guess they're called. Yep. And they kind of look like alligators. And they're little guys, or at least some of them are little guys. And they're on top of Morty and Swatnam and it kind of totally reminds me of the Chris Pine Captain Kirk getting chewed on by those little aliens and Beyond.
Right. Yeah. No, totally. Now, I was happy to see the little kobolds because I've been painting a lot of little kobolds lately. So it was kind of
cool to see them. Yeah. You've been 3D printing and painting?
Yep. And I had a whole set of kobolds just recently. So I kind of wish I would have read this first because I didn't think any.
Still haven't played the game.
Still haven't played the game. Well, I played a little bit, but not like. Okay. Not like you're supposed to.
Okay. You need to get others to play with.
I know, right? We should play, Ken. Let's do it.
I'll get right on that.
Anyways, I like the little monsters and stuff they were fighting. One of them being the Uglith thing, which is like a three-legged, three-tentacled monster. Don't see those very often. You know, usually everything's symmetrical. So it was kind of, it's one of those monsters that aren't symmetrical. So it automatically looks weird.
Cool.
I liked seeing it here. Yeah. I got 4,000 XP for killing it.
Right. But in the end, Rick's cheating. So.
Yeah. Totally cheating, which is such a Rick thing.
Totally a Rick thing.
I like when he breaks to the end early because, you know, they left and he doesn't have to try anymore. So he just busts into the end and then those guys are playing cards. Oh, you're not supposed to be here yet.
Bladawi. Yes. He turns them all into liquid viciously.
Yeah, it looks a little bit like Wolverine in Deadpool movie. What happens to a particular character?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's but maybe you don't have to. I definitely would not hold back saying that at this point, because nobody's going to hear this for another year.
Right.
And have you seen that the they got a commercial going now, and they actually show Chris
Evans.
Yes. So they actually show Chris Evans with Deadpool behind him saying, "Avengers Assemble." And then Chris Evans says, "Flame on." And they actually showed it.
That's too bad.
They're to the point that they're showing it in their ads, TV ads.
Well, when I went and saw it the second time, nobody in the theater even made a noise when all that happened. So I think that it was already spoiled for all of them, too. And that was only like, you know, a week or so after the movie came out.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, right after that movie came out, I saw all those scenes on YouTube and Facebook and stuff. So that got spoiled fast.
Yeah. Well, I saw early that Snipes was playing Blade again. So I saw that was ruined for me early. But the whole Johnny Blaze thing was not. So that was a surprise to me. I thought
Johnny
it was great.
Storm.
Or Johnny Storm. There you go. Johnny Storm.
Would have been nice to see Johnny Blaze there, though. Nick Cage show up. That would have been cool.
Well, not necessarily Nick Cage version, but yeah, whatever.
Hmm.
That wasn't exactly the best rendition, Donovan.
Yeah, I think that was the point of a lot of those cameos.
Yeah.
That's not the best Juggernaut, but that's the one that we're going to use because it's funny.
Yeah. Yeah, that Juggernaut. I like the 3D one better. Or the digitally generated one better.
Right. So anyways, yeah, anything else about this issue? I mean, it doesn't end on a cliffhanger, so it's kind of a weird ending. Because it kind of feels like the story's over. Like, okay, but I guess we don't know if he's going to impress the girl or not still. Morty.
Well, that is true. But odds are, now Jerry's going to get into it in the next issue, I'm going to guess.
Right.
So Jerry's going to be in there, and then I guess the girl gets involved again. The store, Hobby Lobby thing. I don't know. That's what you were saying, weren't you?
No, I wasn't saying that.
Oh, I thought you said Morty gets the girl and whatever.
I said I mean, that's one of the things we don't know. I mean, I said, the way this ends, it doesn't end on a cliffhanger, and really the only story point that's not resolved is whether or not he ends up with the girl. You know, the one that he wants to impress at the party. I mean, that's the only storyline that's not resolved already, which is kind of a weird thing for
it. And quite frankly, I think it's irrelevant at this point. I mean, that whole function was that Morty was following an organ, and that's what got him into the D&D stuff in the first place. Mm-hmm. So now that he's in the D&D stuff, the function of that is completely to the side.
So you don't think it'll ever come back?
Well, I don't think so, because I don't think it has to, but it might. Who knows? I mean, there's that one girl that I forgot her, Jennifer? I don't know, something like that. At high school, you know, at school.
The one on the boat, the one on the bus, yeah. The one he's going to go play.
Well, the one in the episodes that he's always.
You're talking about the TV show. Yeah, I don't know.
I'm talking about the TV show.
Yeah.
So ultimately, she will always come into the play. She is Morty's little red-haired girl. So, and that's a Charlie Brown reference. So,
okay.
Speaking of references, before we move off, I just wanted to mention a few other references.
Okay.
Some that I recognized immediately and others I had to look up.
Okay.
Okay. So there's a great scene where they're in so the family already left. They went to the bar, the pub, whatever. And then Rick shows up and there's Beth says, "Oh, a couple of bugbears were killing the local livestock. We tracked them down, took care of it, and there was much rejoicing." So there was much rejoicing. That's a Monty Python reference. Got that immediately.
Okay. I missed that one.
Well, yeah. If you're a Monty Python fan, you'd get it.
Okay.
So I love that. And then the other one I didn't get, although I knew it was a reference. I just didn't know what it was, so I had to look it up. So Rick says he will never understand you Hugglepuffs.
Oh.
I knew it was, so I knew it was a reference to something, but I didn't know what it was. So I looked it up and okay, it's a Harry Potter reference. That's one of the houses, I guess, at Hogwarts. So, okay, Hufflepuff.
Yeah.
Fine, whatever. Because I knew it wasn't what the wizards call people, normal people. They're muggles or something.
Muggles, yeah.
So Hufflepuff, yeah. It was like,
Hufflepuffs, yeah.
Or Hufflepuff.
Yeah, yeah, Hufflepuff's one of the other houses.
Right.
In Harry Potter, yeah.
Yep. One of the four houses of Hogwarts school.
What are the other ones?
Like I know.
Is it Slytherin?
Well, Slytherin.
Gryffindor. And... Okay. Oh, man, what's the other one? I don't know. I bet my wife would.
Yeah.
Smack me upside the head for not remembering.
So I've never read a Harry Potter book ever, 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 nor have I had interest. And the movies, I didn't have that much of an interest in either. But, yeah. You know, we took the kids to see some because the kids' grandmother had gotten them into Harry Potter. So she was a big Harry Potter fan. And so we went to see like the first movie and it was like, okay, yeah, it's fine. Fine. But then I finally saw, you know, I think it was maybe the third or fourth book or movie where Harry's like the Griffin's in that one and he's like going back in time and stuff. And it's like, hey, this is Star Trek. Cool. So I kind of like that one. And that was like the only one I really liked.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I think that's the third one or something. I don't remember.
Yeah, something like that. The kids were a little older. Yeah.
Yeah, they're good.
Yeah. Well, they must be. They've been incredibly popular. I just never really got into it.
Right.
So that's a cool reference. Any other references they threw in there that I didn't mention?
Not that I saw. That wasn't just like a reference to a random species or something that's in Dungeons & Dragons.
Yeah. Cool.
I mean, the Rick sitting on the throne was kind of like a Conan the Barbarian
pose. Okay. When he's all alone.
Yeah, he's all alone.
Pondered everything.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
The King
Conan. He looks contemplative.
Right.
On the. He's got everything.
But he has.
But he doesn't have his family.
He doesn't have the family.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay. Well, Donovan, are we going to do the last two issues?
Oh yeah, why not?
Why not? Indeed.
I mean,
so we're building
up
our inventory. So we've got one new issue that's come out, at least one that's come out, but I guess we don't have both yet, or two to do yet.
The Star Trek ongoings, yeah, I think we're still short one at the time of recording, yeah. So.
Right.
So we'll do one more Rick and Morty, and then we'll be back on the Star Trek, at least for a week.
Way now. Great.
Yeah, I kind of hate that they're slowing down so much.
Well, isn't there something else they're coming out with? In Star Trek world, not just the two ongoing parallel series.
There's the Star Trek 500 because they've already done it. They've already done 100 issues since
400.
400.
Yeah.
Is there another miniseries? I don't know.
I thought so. I thought I had seen something on one of the backs of the books, but maybe not. Cool. Well, we'll get back to it. So
we'll
in the meantime, it's great doing these Star Trek Comic Book Review Presents because they're nice little changes of pace.
Exactly. Yep. Speaking of Dungeons & Dragons, so for years, IDW's been doing Dungeons & Dragons and Star Trek and a whole bunch of other licensed comic books. Mm-hmm. But here recently, like on Comixology and stuff, all the Dungeons & Dragons books disappeared, and come to find out, it's moving over to Dark Horse. So Dark Horse will now have the rights to Dungeons and Dragons and Magic the Gathering and things like that. So
it's
all getting pulled back. And they already did that with Ghostbusters because Ghostbusters was on IDW for years and years and years and years, and then it got pulled. So
yeah,
it's kind of, I don't know why IDW is losing all these cool franchises. They lost Ghostbusters, they lost Transformers, G.I. Joe, and now Dungeons and Dragons. I don't know. Hopefully Star Trek sticks around.
Better. They're doing an awesome job with it.
Yeah, I know. They're really doing a really good job.
I think they got a really good relationship with Paramount. You know, I think they got a really good relationship, so I don't expect it to go anywhere, but.
Well, with Paramount going somewhere, you don't know what's going to happen.
Well, if they get absorbed by Disney or something, it'll all go with Marvel, but hopefully, I doubt that's not going to happen.
Yeah, I doubt Disney will buy them.
I mean, they got enough franchises. I mean, they got to worry about their own weakening franchises they got to focus on. Why buy more?
Right, right.
So, okay.
Anyways, all right. Well, enough chit-chat. We'll let you go, and we'll be back next week.
Sounds great. Thanks for joining us, everybody, on The Review.
Thank you for listening to Star Trek Comic Book Review. All Star Trek stories and characters are copyrighted CBS Studios Incorporated. All music, stories, and characters discussed are for entertainment purposes only. You can email us at startcomicbookreview@gmail.com. Visit us at our website, www.stcomicbookreview.com. Subscribe to us via iTunes or friend us on Facebook at First Name ST Comic, Second Name Book Review. See you next time on Star Trek Comic Book Review.
Let's get the hell out of here.